Very, very good. Thank you. Maybe we can sing again the song that we just learned, Arrived at Home. And this time, when we sing, we can be aware of everyone's voice that are close to us and around us, to really feel that we have all arrived here together. So just to be aware of each other's presence as we sing. Okay. It's a little too low, can you put a little higher?
Good evening, dear friends. Good evening, dear Sangha. Today is April the 5th in the year 2012. And we are welcome to our retreat, Cultivating Happiness. This is our first day of the retreat. We have 6 days to be together. And with the practice of mindfulness, we can make these 6 days, 6 happy days. And we can also bring a lot of transformation and healing. The practice of mindfulness help us to generate the energy of mindfulness, the energy of peace, the energy of understanding, the energy of compassion that will be healing, nourishing, and transforming. When we practice together, we can generate a very powerful collective energy of mindfulness, of peace, of compassion. And every one of us will profit from that collective energy of mindfulness and peace and compassion. So everyone will be able to contribute his best or her best in the success of our retreat. We have to invest every breath and every step in order to make the retreat a success. Every breath should be in mindfulness. Every step should be in mindfulness. And that is enjoyable also, because breathing in can be a very enjoyable thing to do. Making a step can be a very joyful and pleasant thing to do also. We don't have to suffer with the practice. We don't have to struggle and fight and suffer in order to breathe in mindfully. We don't have to suffer, to struggle, to fight in order to make a peaceful, nourishing, and healing step. And when we do that together, the peace, the nourishment, the healing will be collective also. So we should invest every moment of our being together here in order to bring about transformation and healing. Tonight we will begin with the practice of chanting and listening. And this is also the practice of mindfulness. There is suffering and happiness in us. The seeds of happiness are in us. They might be buried, covered up by many layers of suffering and forgetfulness, but the seeds of happiness are there in the depth of our consciousness. So with the practice of mindfulness, we can get in touch with these beautiful seeds of happiness and allow the machines to manifest and to bloom as flowers. Also, there are seeds of suffering that are in us. Sometimes we are able to smile, to laugh, but that does not mean that the suffering in us is not there. In fact, they are there in the form of seeds. And when they are too strong, they force their way up. They manifest and they make us suffer. Their name is fear, anxiety, despair, anger, violence, and so on. And the practice of mindfulness is to be there, body and mind united, in order to help the seeds of happiness to manifest, in order to recognize the seeds of suffering and despair when they manifest, and learn how to embrace them mindfully, tenderly, so that we can bring relief, and later on we can help transform them into something more positive, like joy and compassion. So the chanting is a kind of mindfulness practice. And tonight, the chanting will be aiming at recognizing the suffering inside of us and in the world. The monastics will practice chanting, and the rest of us will practice listening to the chanting. And both monastics and lay practitioners, we practice mindfulness of chanting and listening and getting in touch with the suffering inside of us. And getting in touch and listen deeply to the suffering inside of us and in the world. The suffering in us somehow reflects the suffering of the world. If we get in touch deeply enough with our own suffering, we get in touch at the same time with the suffering of the world. The suffering in us may also be the continuation of the suffering of our parents and ancestors. So when we get in touch with our own suffering, we may understand the roots of the suffering of our parents and our ancestors. And getting in touch and listening to our own suffering and the suffering of our parents and ancestors and the world, we have the power to generate understanding and compassion. Understanding suffering always brings about the energy of compassion. If we can really get in touch with the suffering and touch the suffering deeply enough, understanding will arise. And if understanding of suffering arises, naturally the energy of compassion will arise also. And we know that the energy of compassion has the power to heal and to transform. We are not afraid of going home to us in order to get in touch with the suffering and to listen to it, because we know the practice of mindfulness. With the practice of mindfulness of listening and chanting, we can generate the energy of mindfulness, which makes us strong enough to go home without fear, in order to get in touch and to embrace our suffering. People of the world, they do not like to go home to themselves and get in touch with suffering. They believe that to be an unpleasant thing to do. That is why their practice is always to try to run away from themselves, from their own suffering, or to cover up the suffering inside by the means of consumption. We consume television, we consume the internet, we consume food and everything else, like music and so on, in order just not to have to get in touch with the suffering. But the teaching of the Buddha is that we should go home to ourselves and get in touch with the suffering and listen deeply to it in order to understand. Suffering is the first noble truth. If you avoid that, we cannot get to the second noble truth, which is the making of the suffering. And there is no way that we can see the path leading to transformation and healing. That is why touching the first noble truth is a very deep practice. There is a bodhisattva whose name is Avalokita, Avalokiteshvara. It means the person who can listen to the suffering in order to get free. Ishvara means freedom. Avalokita means listening. Just listen and you get the freedom that you need. And listening here, first of all, is the listening of our own suffering. And with the energy of mindfulness, we are able to come home to ourselves without fear. And we can use the energy of mindfulness of breathing in order to recognize and embrace the energy of the pain, despair, anger in us. And this is a process of healing. The monastics are trained to chant in such a way that when they chant the name for the first time, they get in touch with themselves and touch the suffering inside, the suffering of their parents and ancestors. And when they chant the name for the second time, they allow themselves to be in touch with the suffering of those who are around them and in the world. And the practice is to help the energy of compassion to be born. When compassion is born in your heart, you suffer less right away. And you can begin to look at yourself and the world with the eyes of compassion. Then transformation and healing take place. Avalokiteshvara is not a god that exists outside of us. Every one of us has the capacity to listen and to understand the suffering, and to allow compassion to arise. So the energy of understanding and compassion in us is the Bodhisattva himself, herself. This is not to pray for a god, to a god for our transformation and healing, but a practice to generate the energy of understanding and compassion. While listening, we don't have to do much. The only thing we do is to allow ourselves to be present in the here and the now, with our body relaxed. And it is possible to stop all the thinking altogether, because the thinking will bring us elsewhere and does not allow us to be in the here and the now. So the best way is to be mindful of our in-breath and out-breath. Breathing in, we follow our in-breath. Breathing out, we follow our breath. And we become our in-breath and out-breath. And that is the best way to stop all thinking and not allow the past and the future and our project to carry us away. And since other people around us are practicing the same, we can lean on the collective energy in order to keep being in the here and the now with our body relaxed. There is always some tension and pain in our body. We have allowed tension and pain to be accumulated in our body. Our life is a hectic life. And that is why we should have the chance to allow the tension to be released and help reduce the pain in our body. If we know how to stop our thinking, allow our body to relax, and allow the collective energy of the Sangha to penetrate into our body, we can release easily the tension inside of our body. We don't have to do anything. Just allow the energy of the Sangha to embrace us and to help release the tension in us. And in a few minutes, we may feel lighter, better. And if we have a block of pain or sorrow or fear or anger or despair in our heart, it's the time for us to open our heart and allow the energy of the Sangha to penetrate and to help hold that pain for us. Dear Sangha, here is my pain. Here is my sorrow. Here is my despair. My energy of mindfulness and concentration is not strong enough to hold it. So please help. Embrace that block of pain and anger and fear and despair for me. And we practice like a drop of water, allowing herself to be embraced by the whole river, to be transported by the river. We don't have to do anything. We entrust ourselves to the Sangha. It means taking refuge, surrendering to the Sangha. And if we allow the Sangha's energy to penetrate into our heart and embrace our pain and sorrow, we will feel better after a few minutes of practice. This can take place right tonight. And if we have someone close to us who suffers at this moment deeply, could not come tonight for the retreat, we can very well send this collective energy to him or to her. Just think of that person, or call his or her name silently, and then there will be a connection. And this energy will be channeled to that person right in this moment. And at home, or in the hospital, that person will feel better. breathing in, I'm aware that the Sangha is there, my Sangha is there around me. Breathing out, I smile to my Sangha with happiness. My Sangha is there, smiling to Sangha. Dear Sangha, the Buddha said in the Anguttara Nikaya, there is one thing, and if left uncultivated, will bring a lot of suffering. What is that something? There is something that is well cultivated that will bring a lot of happiness. What is that something? The answer is our mind. An uncultivated mind can bring a lot of suffering. A cultivated mind can bring a lot of happiness. And that is why the practice of cultivating happiness is the practice of cultivating the mind. The mind is the foundation of all happiness. Are all suffering. We have the term culture. To cultivate means to produce. What is not there, you can produce the crop. And the Pali term citta bhavana means cultivating the mind. Cultivating the mind is the practice. A practice that can bring happiness, that a practice that can transform the suffering. In order to cultivate, we need the land, the soil. We need the seeds, we need the water, we need the compost, we need the air, we need the sun, we need the rain. And a practitioner needs all these conditions in order to succeed in his or her cultivating happiness, cultivating her mind, his mind. The mind is the soil. The mind is the land. The mind is the garden. And if the land has been left uncultivated for a long time, it becomes very hard. A lot of bad seeds have been planted. And there's a lot of stones thorns, a lot of wheat coming up. There is no flower, no fruit, nothing good, because the land is left uncultivated for a long time. So many of us have left our mind uncultivated for a long time. And we allow the good, bad seeds, the seed of anger, fear, craving, and so on, to fall into the land. And we have harvested a lot of unhappiness and suffering. Therefore, we need a gardener in order to take care of the land. And who is the gardener? The mind of enlightenment, the bodhicitta, the desire to practice, that is the gardener. We have a garden, we need a gardener. The will to practice, the desire to practice. And in the Buddhist tradition, we call that gardener the citta, the gardener, the practitioner. The mind of love, the mind of enlightenment, the mind, the intention to bring about love, the intention to bring about understanding, enlightenment. That is what we need, a farmer, a gardener. And we are that farmer, we are that gardener, because we have the intention to take care of our land, to make a revolution, to begin cultivate the land. We have that kind of energy. If any of us has the intention to practice, he or she is a gardener. She has the mind of love. She has the mind of enlightenment. We need the intention to practice. We need a gardener. And then we need the seeds. Of course, we have to plow the land to make the land possible to cultivate. And then we need the seed to plant. But we don't worry about the seeds, because we know that the good seeds are in us. We don't need to bring the seeds from the outside. If the land is cultivated, and then we have the seeds already buried deeply in the land. And if we know how to water the land, we know how to bring in elements of nourishment, and then the land of our mind will bring about flowers and fruits of happiness. And we also need an environment, and that is a sangha. We need the sunshine, we need the rain. And the sangha, the community of practice, can guide us, can lead us, can support us, can protect us, can provide us with energy in order for us to succeed in our attempt to transform the land, to cultivate the land, to plant the seeds, and to harvest. And we have all these conditions. The seed of love, we have it. Everyone has the capacity to love. The seed of understanding, we have it. We are capable of being mindful, of being understanding, of loving, And with the practice, as a gardener, we can make the flower the fruit of love, understanding, and happiness bloom. In the Buddhist tradition, we say that the Dharma is lovely in the beginning. The Dharma is lovely in the middle, and the Dharma is lovely at the end. It means as soon as you take up the Dharma and begin to practice, happiness and peace and joy is already possible. You don't need to wait into the future in order to begin experiencing peace, compassion, joy, and happiness. There is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. There is no way to enlightenment. Enlightenment is the way. And this is very true in this practice. Suppose you talk about enlightenment. We think that you have to strive very hard in order to reach enlightenment after 5 years or 10 years or a lifetime. But that is not the case. Enlightenment can be possible in the here and the now. Enlightenment is always enlightenment about something. And that enlightenment can be cultivated. When you practice mindful breathing, for instance, we just breathe in or become aware of our in-breath. And when you are breathing in, you get the enlightenment that you are breathing in. Awareness of breathing is a form of enlightenment. There are people who breathe in and out all day, but do not know that they are breathing in and breathing out. And you, when you breathe in mindfully, you are aware of the fact that you are breathing in. That is already the beginning of enlightenment. You are enlightened on the fact that you are breathing in. There is light. There is understanding. There is a vision that you are there and you are breathing in. And if the practice goes a little bit deeper, you get the enlightenment deeper. Breathing in, you suddenly notice that you are alive. Breathing in, I find that I'm alive, still alive. And this is a fact, because someone who is already dead cannot breathe in anymore. And because you are breathing in, you know that you are alive. That is a discovery. That is enlightenment. And you touch a miracle, the miracle of being alive. Dear friends, to be alive, to be still alive, is a miracle. And it is the greatest of all miracles, to be alive. And we get that enlightenment just by breathing in. So enlightenment is possible right here and right now. And that enlightenment can bring happiness, can bring joy. And that is why when you breathe out, you can already celebrate the fact that you are alive. Happiness is possible right in here and now. Enlightenment also, joy also. And this is the Dharma, which is lovely in the beginning, lovely in the middle, and lovely in the end. And you don't have to suffer practicing the Dharma. Practicing the Dharma is a very pleasant thing. It brings concentration, mindfulness, compassion, understanding, and happiness right away. When you breathe in and you bring your mind back to your body, you connect with your body. You get in touch with your body. You know that you have a body. You are aware that you have a body. you are enlightened on the fact that you have a body. Many of us spend 3 hours, 4 hours with our computers, and we get completely lost, and we don't remember that we have a body. And by that way, we get alienated from our body. And if we continue like that, one day we will get very sick. If we get alienated from our body, we don't know that we are alive on earth. We are separated from our body, from Mother Earth, from the air, from the water, from the trees. And that is why breathing in is an act of enlightenment, an act of compassion. Because when you bring your mind home to your body, you are kind to your body. You connect with your body. And if you know how to release the tension from your body while breathing out, this is an act of compassion directed to your body. So compassion, love, understanding, happiness, enlightenment, everything is possible just with one in-breath or one step taken in from mindfulness. We are not practicing in order to be reborn in a faraway pure land or kingdom of God in the future. We are practicing in order to come back to life in the here and the now. And if we are able to touch deeply the wonders of life, the wonder of our body, of the planet Earth, of the sunshine, of the river, of the constellations, we can touch the wonder of life in the here and the now and get the fulfillment in the present moment. We don't need to die in order to have that care, to go to the kingdom of God and get that experience. In fact, we have to be very alive. And to be alive, that is possible. With one in-breath, you can come home to the here and the now, body and mind together, completely established in the here and the now, and you are in position to touch your body, to get in touch with your body. You are in a position to get in touch with the beautiful Mother Earth, that the beautiful cosmos that is there available in the here and the now. And that can bring a feeling of fulfillment in right in the here and the now. We do not look for enlightenment, fulfillment in the future. We touch eternity in the present moment, because the eternity is available in the present moment. It's like the water is available in a wave. When you touch the wave, you touch water. When you touch the present moment with mindfulness and deep concentration, you can touch eternity. And that is the practice. So the fulfillment of the present moment is our practice. And this is possible with mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness of concentration are two kinds of energy that can be generated all day long. When you brush your teeth, you may choose to brush your teeth mindfully and enjoy every moment of toothbrushing. You don't try to finish with brushing your teeth in order to do something else. It's wonderful to brush, to be brushing your teeth. That's the Dharma. And you can choose to stay in the Pure Land with Buddha, in the Kingdom of God, in order to brush your teeth. You don't try to hurry and to finish in order to do something else. And you learn the art of toothbrushing in such a way that during the time of brushing your teeth, you have freedom. You have joy. You stay alive. And the 2 minutes or 3 minutes of toothbrushing is worth living, because in that moment you can also touch eternity you can also touch all the wonders of life in that moment. Thanks to mindfulness and concentration. The more you are concentrated, the more you are mindful, the deeper you touch the wonders of life. And the fulfillment can be achieved. You don't need power, money, fame, sex in order to get that kind of fulfillment. We learn to sit in such a way that fulfillment is possible while sitting every moment. We can sit in such a way that allows our body to relax. We can sit in such a way that we become fully alive. We can sit in such a way that we become a free person, not being carried away by the sorrow and the regret concerning the past, not to be carried away by the fear and the uncertainty about the future. Sit like a free person. And this is possible with the practice of mindful sitting, mindful breathing. You can enjoy every in-breath and out-breath and stay alive and touch the wonders of life in that present moment. We have to train ourselves for happiness. Happiness is to be cultivated. And how? With mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness and concentration are the two kinds of energies that always bring about insight. Insight is understanding. Insight is about enlightenment. When you get in touch with your suffering, you come to understand the nature of your suffering. That is a kind of insight. That is a kind of enlightenment. Because understanding insight always bring about liberation, freedom, and compassion. We know that suffering is a kind of flower. Le fleur du mal. Happiness is a kind of flower also. And both suffering and happiness are impermanent. In our garden, we cultivate the flower of happiness. We cultivate the flowers of joy. Because we want to produce flowers of joy and happiness. But at the same time, we know that happiness is impermanent. All flowers are impermanent. But we practice in such a way that we will not be sorrowful and despair when the flower becomes something else, like the garbage, the compost. Because if we know that flowers are impermanent, we don't suffer. And that is why when the flowers become the garbage, we don't suffer because we know how to cultivate other flowers. Flowers after flowers. And the flowers that have become pieces of garbage, we know how to make good use of it in order to nourish a new generation of flowers. It's like when you grow lotus flowers, you know that lotus flower, you cannot grow them on marble. You have to grow them in the mud. Without mud, you can not have fragrant, beautiful lotus flowers. So suffering has a kind of role in making flowers. And if we are a good practitioner, we don't discriminate against suffering. We look deeply and we can see the goodness of suffering, the usefulness of suffering. As an organic gardener, we know how to preserve the garbage, the rubbish, in order to make them into compost to nourish the flowers. You don't have to throw away anything if you are a good organic gardener. So a good practice, a good practitioner, she's not afraid of suffering. She can smile to suffering because she knows how to make good use of the suffering in order to nourish happiness. And that is the way to cultivate the land of the mind. We are not afraid of suffering. We should understand the very nature of suffering. We should see the goodness, the usefulness of suffering. And we should be able to make good use of the suffering in order to promote, to nourish the flowers of happiness. And we know that the flowers of suffering, they are also impermanent. That is why we are not afraid of them. Both happiness and suffering are impermanent. And there is a connection, a very deep connection between suffering and happiness. Without one, the other cannot be. Usually, with our mind of discrimination, we only want to choose happiness. We want to throw away suffering. Because we do not have the wisdom of non-discrimination. Suppose we look at this sheet of paper, and we can distinguish between the left side and the right side. And we know very well that the left and the side, they inter-are. The left and the right lean on each other in order to manifest. Without the left, the right cannot be. Without the right, the left cannot be. If you are on the left, politically, you should not wish for the right to disappear altogether. Because if they disappear altogether, you disappear also at the same time. The left and the right cannot be by themselves alone. They have to interbe together. That is the teaching of interbeing of the Buddha. So let us look at suffering and happiness with our insight of interbeing. Without suffering, there is no happiness. Without happiness, there is no suffering. The flower and the garbage, they inter-are. And we have to be skillful as a gardener. We should not discriminate. We should make good use of the suffering in order to grow, to nourish our flowers. There is a deep connection between the two. We are not trying to run away anymore from our own suffering. Instead, we want to embrace our suffering deeply with mindfulness and concentration in order to understand. And understanding will bring about compassion and relief and healing and the flower of happiness. To have an opportunity to stay together for 6 days is a very rare and it is possible for us to make good use of our time together, and we should be able to invest every moment of our time together in order to generate the energy of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. It is the energy of the gardener. If a gardener is a good gardener, because she is made of the energy of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And with these three energies, surely we will be able to produce the flower of happiness and joy and transform the flower of the garbage of suffering and despair. I promise to do my best. I promise to be with my in-breath and out-breath wherever I find myself. In the bathroom, in the meditation hall, walking outside, going, brushing my teeth, eating my breakfast, I promise to stay with myself, to allow my mind to be with my body. I promise that every step I make is mindful step. I want to stay in the here and the now with every step. I do not want to lose myself in the world, in the future, in the past. And every one of us should make that promise. We will make good use of our time together just by, in order to generate the energy of mindfulness, concentration, which bring insight. And the happiness and the success of our retreat depends on that commitment. And it is a pleasure to combine our practice to generate together these wonderful energies of mindfulness and concentration and insight, the foundation of all happiness and peace and joy. Each day we have a 1 hour of to practice mindful walking together. But the rest of the day, any time we need to move from one place to another place, let us apply the art of mindful walking and enjoy every step. Living in the world, we used to run, to walk and run quickly. So there is a kind of habit of running. And the practice of mindful breathing help us to recognize the habit of running so that we can slow down and enjoy every breath. Every mindful step of yours contribute to make the kingdom of God manifest in the here and the now. Don't provide us with the kingdom, with the pure land. The kingdom and the pure land is possible in the here and the now with our mindful in-breath, out-breath, with mindful steps. Together, we make the kingdom available to all of us in the here and the now. And when we brush our teeth, when we eat our breakfast, when we take a shower, we can always enjoy this moment with our mindful breathing and feel alive and enjoy every moment. Brother Pháp Dung and the Brother Pháp Ứng, Pháp Lai, will remind us, offer us some more recommendations in order to enjoy our 6 days together. I see you tomorrow morning for sitting meditation. Thầy Pháp Ứng với Thầy Pháp Lai. Thank you.
Dear friends, as Tai leaves the hall, we invite all the teenagers to come out too and follow Sister Hai Nim and Brother Phap Thai and our friends who, so that you can spend time together now. Thank you.
So, good evening, dear Thai, the Sangha. Thai has laid down the foundation for our practice, the principle of intervening between happiness and suffering. Based on the energy of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And now, Prophet Lai and I would like to offer more concrete basic practices. Thay has shared about the mindful breathing and mindful walking. We would like to share about listening to the sound of the bell. We will have a chance to practice listening to the sound of the bell with mindfulness through all this retreat, as some of us has experienced in the previous retreat. Whenever we hear the sound of the bell produced by a bell master, that sound of the bell already embodies the energy of mindfulness and concentration, because the bell master need to be mindful, need to be there and concentrate in order to produce, to invite the bell to sound for us. So hearing the sound of the bell is a chance for us also to join in that energy of mindfulness and concentration. And we can come back to our breathing. Breathing in, we are mindful of our breath. And breathing out, we are mindful of out breath. And being there, present, enjoying the sound of the bell, enjoying the breath in our body, that is very nourishing and healing. And for each sound of the bell, we enjoy three breaths. And we stop wherever we are doing, whether talking, walking, eating, whatever. We stop the bodily action, it make it easy for us to do. And collectively, we can produce the energy of mindfulness, and that energy of mindfulness of the whole community penetrates in each of us. And we are energized, we feel refreshed. So that is very powerful practice that we do in Plum Village and in every retreat. However, we can use the sound of the bird to do the same. or the sound of the church, or the sound of the children, or the rain. So we can make use of the sound in order to come back and generate the energy of mindfulness. Yeah, that is a practice that we can do, listening to the sound of the bell. So now I would like to invite Prabhupada to offer another practice that we can use during this retreat.
So, dear Thai, dear friends, we come together for this retreat, and we will experience a sense of building a community of practice together. When we look around, many faces we don't know, we feel somehow strangers to each other. Initially, it's a bit strange to be with so many people, and yet always on these retreats, by the end, we sing together and we feel very happy, like a big family together. So as has been shared by Thay and my brother Phap Ung, the collective energy is so supportive for us to be together, to experience the benefits of the practice. We keep getting reminded by each other about how to practice well, to come back to ourselves. It turns out when we come back to ourselves, we're more present for each other. And when I will share a bit about the practice of eating together. We have our meals in silence, and we have an opportunity to eat together as a family, and yet it's also a very personal practice, and we're eating in silence. We have an opportunity to be really in touch with the food and also the people around us. The way we do when we serve ourselves in silence, and we take our food to our table. And when a table is full, then we start together for that table, and we can read the five contemplations. When we contemplate our food, we can notice the colors, the smells, and the fragrance of the food, and also the beautiful manifestation of the broccoli before we put it into our mouth. We can be mindful right from taking the piece of broccoli or carrot, and as we bring it to our mouth, we're mindful the whole way through. We chew the food mindfully, and we're aware of the whole process of eating. And like this, we generate this energy of mindfulness. And what happens is that the experience of eating becomes more and more alive for us. The colors become more vivid, and we notice many things. It's nice to chew many times, because we have that habit energy normally of just a few chews and then swallow. So we sometimes offer the practice of counting the chews, so that you can see what your tendency is. Maybe you try chewing 30 times before you swallow at least, and you can go more. Counting the chews is a fun way to experiment. And the food like this, it becomes quite delicious. and we can savor the food. We can also notice the habits we have to want to get straight to the dessert, or so we watch our mind a little bit like this. We're also very grateful for everything, all the conditions that brought the food to the table, including the cooks and the farmers, the sunshine. And as a meditation, it's very easy for a child to see that the whole cosmos is in the food, in the piece of broccoli or whatever it is. Maybe for them the chips that they like. So the eating meditation can be a very enlightening experience, and so we invite you to enjoy that practice. And although we eat in silence, we also really benefit from each other's collective presence and practice together, and we have the sense of being a family together while we're eating. So that's something about our practice of eating. And I would like to, because Taifa Ung is on the organizing team, and maybe there are some specifics about the format for the eating when we have the bells. And
so each of us is divided in our own dining hall, so we eat in that dining hall for the whole retreat. And for all three meals in silence, except lunch, then we will read the five contemplations together. Yeah. So when you have your food and you go to the end of the hall, and then we fill a table and we sit down, and we read the five contemplations together, and then we can start eating. We don't have to wait for everybody comes and eat. So fill the table, and then sit down and read the contemplations and eat together. So each table take care for our own table. Yeah. And every 50 minutes, then we hear the sound of the bell. And then we stop eating, and then we listen to the five contemplations collectively. And this helps us to really be aware of each other and as a community, and enjoy the five contemplations together. And after that, we continue with eating, and people will still come in and serve and sit down and eat. And after 20 minutes of the first contemplation, the first reading of the five contemplations, after that, after 20 minutes, we hear another sound of the bell and another reading of the five contemplations. That is for the another wave of people coming. And so we welcome them, and we offer them also another five contemplations and our own energy of mindfulness. This to support them. And that is for lunch. So twice reading, two times reading of five contemplations. And for breakfast and dinner, we eat the whole time in silence. However, on our own table, there is the text, five contemplations, available for each of us. Then we can read them silently as a practice of mindfulness. Yeah, that's all for reading, eating. Yeah. Shall I continue with another practice?
I just add one practice that I really like to do. because it really shows me my habit of my mind. When we're standing to, sometimes we may experience long queues for serving the food, or hopefully we do quite well to organize the flow. But if you find yourself waiting, we practice queuing meditation, and it's a very British practice, and it's a wonderful thing to realize that you can make incredibly good use of that time when normally we just think we're biting, you know, we're sort of just grinning and bearing it, but or just chatting sort of about the weather to somebody in the queue. But instead to be silent and to really feel yourself standing there, your sense of balance as you stand on the ground, be in touch with your body, come back to yourself and recognize what's going on for you, including the mental formations of impatience or I've got something better to do than this. Just notice these things and breathe, and it's a very wonderful opportunity. Thank you.
The next practice is the practice of noble silence, and it starts from after the evening activity until after breakfast. And noble silence is produced by practicing mindfulness. So that is the stillness within our body and our mind that we experience and that radiate and nourish each of us. So this is not a suppressed noble silence, but it is a pleasant, it's very healing and help us to be in touch with life, with ourselves. And therefore it is called noble silence. And though we are silenced within, but we feel connected to each other. We feel we are in commune. We feel we are as a community, as a Sangha body. And especially the children, they really can feel it. And they get the nourishment from that. And they become also quiet, and they go back to themselves. So for them, this is a real joy when they see us noble, silent. So this is a real gift, real offering to them. I know that you have experienced at your home when you are at peace. And you feel, the children feel it, and they radiate also communication, they radiate connection to you as well. They come to you like the bees come to the flowers. So noble silence we practice. Actually, we don't have to limit to the time from this to that. Whenever we walk or we sit or we talk in mindfulness, that stillness, that noble silence is radiating already. So you can enjoy this practice whenever or anywhere. If you need to talk, during that time of noble silence, you can also whisper, or you can write on the piece of paper and communicate. And the noble silence also help us to look inward, because the thinking is happening, the feeling is happening, the perception is happening. And being still, then we understand, oh, what is happening. And it can happen that the noble silence help us to recognize
Dear friends, I'll share something about a practice of listening to Dharma talks. I think when we are listening to Thai, it's very easy to go to be very still and go into a very deep place. And that's Thai really helps us with that, the way, because of his deep practice. I just want to share from my experience that in order to let the receive the full benefit, get the best experience, if you like, from listening to Dharma talks, it's very helpful if we stay in touch with our breathing. Can notice the breathing from the belly when we're seated. And if we are in touch with our breathing, it turns out that the quality of the listening and the compassion and deep profoundness of the teaching can come in very deeply, and we're somehow listening in a different way to the usual way. So it's just an encouragement to do that. It's okay to take some notes, but not too much, and don't let it take you away from you being with yourself, being in touch with your body, so you're really open. We call it the Dharma rain, allowing the rain to penetrate the soil, as Thay was talking about, cultivating the ground, the soil of our consciousness. The Dharma talks are recorded in many ways. So it was always an opportunity to go back and revisit.
So, dear friends, it's now 9:15, and it has been a long day for all of us to come here and to prepare for this moment, for this retreat. So, I think it's long enough for us to sit, and we would like to end this session of orientation with just two more short things. One is concrete guideline about health and safety in terms of fire and so on. And another one is a practical announcement for further for tomorrow and so on. I would like to invite one of the, please come up and share about health and safety. Maybe in 5 minutes, please come over here.
Dear Sangha, my name is Isabel. And I'm looking after questions of safety during the retreat. So please be patient for 5 minutes while I bring up a few points about safety on this site. Unlike Plum Village, this is a public site. So there are people around who are not involved with the retreat. And most importantly, there are some quite busy roads. So especially for parents of children, please be very aware of the roads. children can often be playing ball on the fields and not maybe being used to being at Plum Village, where they have the freedom everywhere. But here, please be very aware of the roads. There is also a pond in, I think, the Millennium Garden, and there is a large lake about 10 minutes walk away. In the buildings, we are not allowed any smoking candles or incense, as they may set off the fire alarms, particularly annoying in the middle of the night. I've also been asked to remind you to unplug hair dryers when you leave your rooms. Please don't prop open the fire doors for any reason. Any broken glass, there should be disposal boxes for broken glass on each floor in your hall of residence. So broken glass shouldn't go in the normal bins, but in the proper special boxes. If there are any faults or problems in your halls, please report them to the porters of the halls. Walking meditation, there's a slight possibility we may go off the footpaths during walking meditation, so please wear appropriate footwear. And anybody with mobility problems, you might have to be prepared to sort of buddy up with somebody else, and there's a possibility you might have to come back if the going gets too difficult. Shoes and walking sticks and things that you might leave in corridors, please be mindful of other people's needs and put them well out of the way, please. And we've had a problem in the past with children playing with the automatic doors and revolving doors. So if you could be mindful to prevent that, please. Right, in the very unlikely case of an accident, your first port of call is the university staff in the building where you are, or any building that's nearby. Every building on this campus has a first aid box, and the university staff have access to an emergency number which they can ring to bring first aiders or to get straight through to emergency services. So it's more effective to get in touch with the university staff than to ring 999, because you may not be able to give precise directions to where you are on the campus. So always go to university staff first. And they will use the emergency number. And then also, I would need to be informed as well if anything ever happens. And my mobile phone is always on, and the number is at the information desk in the front lobby here. It's on the board, stuck on the behind the information desk. So please let me know if anything does crop up. And one last thing, I also need to know if anybody has any need of extra help if ever there was a need for evacuation. So, for example, if you're hard of hearing and think you might not hear a fire alarm, or any mobility problems where you think you might need a bit of extra help, I need to let the relevant people know. So I'll be at the information desk in the lobby after this session, and please don't hesitate to come and let me know. So thank you very much for your patience.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, I'm Pete Armstrong, so I'm making some announcements for you as the retreat continues. And the announcements this evening have all come from the Dharma Hall team, who are organising the Dharma Hall for us and the hall over there. So some information from them and some requests from them. The first one is about shoes that Isabel's mentioned. If we could use the whole length of the corridor for storing our shoes and try and keep the area around the doors, the exit doors, the entrance doors clear, that would be very helpful. A reminder about the wristbands. Not all of us can fit in this room, so depending on your colour, you're asked to use Hall 2 over there. And the colour for Hall 2 used tomorrow is purple. The doors. We would very much like this door here on my right to be used by Thay, the monastics, the children, and people with mobility and access needs. So in order to really give them the space and create safety for them, can the rest of us make sure we use that door, the top door, for both exit and entrance? So please can we make sure we follow that habit? There are reserved seats, mostly in that sort of area, for those with access and mobility issues, so that's why they're there. And some information about the loop system. If you're using the loop system for your hearing, we think that it works best on the two sides of the hall. Cushions. For those who are using cushions at the front here, in the past, we've tended to leave them in the hall, but we would like it to be different this year. It would make it much easier for the team who have to shift things around a lot. If you bring your cushions in first thing in the morning for the sitting meditation, leave them until the Dharma talk, but after the Dharma talk, if you could take them away again, please, until you need them again. So that's different from previous years if you've been here before, but it would really help the team if you could follow those instructions. Thank you. Another request from them is that when you're moving into the chairs, if you sit next to the person who's already sitting there and don't leave any gaps, that would be good as well. The Dharma Hall team haven't yet completely met, so could they meet after this orientation by the stage? And finally, if you do have access issues or seating issues, Bill Crook is the Dharma Hall team lead. He's usually to be found kind of hovering around by the door, looking slightly worried. So that's the guy you need. So good night.
So, dear friends, one final encouragement is for us to really make full use of our time while we're here, is to practice walking meditation wherever we go. And this is what Thay was sharing in the Dharma talk. So just in case this, some of you here may be new to the practice of walking meditation, I just give a few tips, ideas of how to think about walking meditation. So when I'm standing up so that I can kind of feel it for myself as I share, you feel the contact of the ground with your feet, and as you walk, you really notice, okay, I'm taking a step with my left foot, my right foot. You're really aware of the act of walking, aware of the contact, the ground with your feet. Sometimes there's an expression, breathing through your feet. Imagine you're standing like this, and you breathe in, you feel like you're breathing through your feet. It's a way of having this sense of really being in touch with your body, and there's a kind of rhythm to our walking which helps us to keep our mind focused. There's the left and the right and the left foot. So as we're walking, we're aware of this rhythm. And we can always synchronize our breathing with our walking, with our steps. So maybe as I breathe in, I take 1, 2, 3 steps. And as I breathe out, I notice there was 4, 5 steps for the out breath. And it depends on your natural rhythm of your breath and how, of course, how quickly you're walking. And in our practice of walking meditation, we encourage you to go as slower than maybe feels immediately natural. We want the slow walking really helps to calm the mind down. When we walk at normal pace, it tends to give the mind the signal we're in that normal mode of a little bit rushing, getting from here to there. And we want to do something different. With walking meditation, we want to experience enjoying the walk for the walk and opening up our senses, especially when we're outside, to enjoy the beauty of the grounds, the sounds and the smells and things like that. And even when we're walking to the bathroom or to our rooms, we can experience a wonderful sensation of walking meditation. So we encourage you not to talk to the person you're walking with. Walking silently gives the most benefit. So that's for you to get the best out of this time, because we will be doing a lot of walking here and there on the retreat from different places. So if you make use of all of those times where we're walking between places to practice walking meditation, you will generate the mindfulness energy. You'll gradually get that, and it will be you'll feel that you've made very good use of the time. And when other people are walking mindfully, it encourages you. And when you are walking very mindfully like that, sometimes even the monastics are maybe rushing a bit, and they see you and they think, wow, I better start practicing again too. So we help each other with the way in which we practice walking meditation here and then. It also creates a very good community of practice energy, you know, because the way we walk around together is very powerful when we do like that. And for this evening, Thai Phap Ong shared about noble silence, and it might not have completely clicked with you, but that means we start after this talk tonight. So it means that when we go out of the hall, we would like to encourage, we begin our noble silence, and it's until after breakfast tomorrow. That's the formal period of noble silence. And it is for your personal benefit, but it may be if you have an emergency and you need to share something, it's okay. But try to, if you need to speak to somebody, try to do it in such a way that doesn't affect other people. And maybe check with yourself, is this necessary? And maybe the other person I want to speak to is wanting to benefit from practicing noble silence. So we try to really limit our speech. But the practice is more than just about not speaking. It's about really coming back to ourselves and peacefully entering the night. So let's do that practice together as best as we can. And thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you. I would like to add the walking meditation. Yes, one aspect of walking meditation together. Please flow as a flock of birds or as a river, and try not to do your own pace, and then you are far, far away, and you won't get the collective energy that you need. So the birds, they make use of the each other, and they can fly far, far, and they are joyful. So please walk with the pace that Thai and the whole community is walking. But if you want to do your own practice, you can do it on your own personal time. One breath, one step, or you can stand and enjoy. But when we do it together during the walking meditation time, please flow and allow the collective energy to carry and nurture you and so on. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting. And good night. Yeah. So upon hearing the sound of the small bell, please massage our feet and our body. And then we hear another sound of the small bell. We stand together up and bow to each other, ask gratitude for supporting.